How do I know whether I have PCOS?
They have irregular cycles. Mm. They have a lot of fatigue and along with that thinning of hair. Mm. So as a patient, what they need to know is you need lifestyle change. I feel there's a lot of self-diagnosis going on these days. Mm. Come to a doctor.
So getting a period delayed for a month, is it abnormal?
Definitely, that's completely a myth. Nowadays, specifically for breastfeeding mothers, would you even believe when I say that they watch phones while they're feeding their babies? I said, stop doing that. You open a book, you will definitely feel sleepy.
In your experience, what is the best time to get pregnant?
Poor women, when they come for 2-3 months, they don't even enjoy their marriage life. Mm. All what they have to do is get pregnant plan because properly. There's a society pressure. Mm. And I feel really sad for them.
Somebody forced the man to...
Actually, I think that's what we need to do from now on. Now I have to go against the men, I think.
Hello guys, this is Dr. Pal Manikam. Welcome to another episode of our podcast series, Gut Feeling with Dr. Pal. We interviewed our friend, Dr. Deepthi Jami, OBGYN, very popular in Chennai. We talked about the most popular topic, PCOS. What is PCOS? What is PCOD? What is the difference? Why you should be concerned if there are any persistent symptoms and where you should not be concerned and what is the treatment option which actually works. Very practical tips have been discussed. So if you are a woman who are trying to understand more about PCOS and if you're finding it difficult to conceive and having some infertility issues, I think this is a wonderful episode that you should definitely watch. I would highly recommend you to watch along with your partner as well because we talked about birth control measures, preservation of the ovum, preservation of the sperms and what are all the risks and the benefits involved. And we also talked about the dietary choices that as a couple that you can do to improve the health of your family. So I'm sure you learn a lot from it. Let's dive deep into it. Hi Deepthi.
Hello sir. Eppadi irukkeenga?
Nalla irukken. We're doing very good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be with you once more.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I have a lot of women audience. So this show, we thought that this discussion would be focused on the most common thing where people are really concerned about, where whether they have PCOS, PCOD, what is this all about?
Yeah.
We have done an episode before where we were trying to clarify this, but we wanted to go to the next level in this discussion where in case if you're diagnosed, what are the steps to be done and everything. So right off the bat, you are close to like 20 years of experience in this easily. So I wanted to ask from a patient standpoint in terms of how do I know whether I have PCOS?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most common questions nowadays. As I was discussing with a few patients when they come to me, they come and tell me the diagnosis themselves. I think the information available nowadays on the internet is so much that they self-diagnose. Uh-huh. And I tell them, no, hold on. Let me tell you whether you have PCOD or PCOS because there's a huge difference between the two and they fail to recognize that. I think PCOD, as it says, no, D is the disease and Essner syndrome. Obviously, syndrome, no, it has something little more than a normal disease would be. Generally, when PCOD, no, if I have to give a diagnosis, the patient should have either irregular cycles. Mm. Most commonly, they are on the higher BMI side. They do have lean PCOS also, but then PCOD in a pakmoto, they do have on the higher side, higher BMI. Second, they have irregular cycles. Mm. They have a lot of fatigue and along with that thinning of hair. So that's most of the common things with scan findings. Of course, in ultrasound, we have to have a typical pattern of the ovary.
Mm-hmm.
If it is not there, then we don't call it PCOD. And the typical pattern of the ovary is identified in ultrasound, along with all these symptoms, is when they are labeled as PCOD. Syndrome comes when there are signs of insulin resistance or also with excessive androgen. So how do I know whether it's insulin resistance? One, either you're into the borderline diabetic range where your metabolic syndrome is starting. That means your waist-hip ratio is different. It's not okay. Second, when you have excessive facial hair, hirsutism. That tells you that your androgen or your testosterone hormones are high. I think those are into PCOS. So the difference between PCOD and PCOS is that when your systematic or metabolic aspect is involved, that's when you're more prone for type 2 diabetes, your heart risk, your cardiovascular risk increases. All that falls into the syndromic thing. Mm. So as a patient, what they need to know is you need lifestyle change. That's the first thing. Whether it's a disease or a syndrome, you need lifestyle change. If at all you are into a higher BMI range, then first check on your lifestyle.
Mm.
Because most of the patients these days, they come and tell me, I'm stressed. What do you do? I work 9-to-5 job. I come home. I have my own set of, they all have helps or whatever, even if they don't have help also, they are fine, they're two-member family, but still they come and tell me they are stressed. Even or a fifth standard kid also comes and tells me, I'm so stressed because of exams. Mm. So stress nowadays is a huge concern. And also when they have irregular periods, they start junk, with a lot of junk eating. Mm. And I think, so what is happening is, I have irregular periods, I'm moody, I want to eat more. Mm. Let me eat more. Mm. So let me eat more and soothe myself, because only then my mental health is going to be all right. Mm-hmm. So that's becoming a vicious cycle. And that cycle or the circle is not broken anywhere. Mm. That's what is happening nowadays. Mm. I feel the distinction between a disease and a syndrome is very important. And second, they should not self-diagnose. Mm. I feel there's a lot of self-diagnosis going on these days. Mm. I think that's the first step. Come to a doctor. It can be a gynecologist. It can also be a general medicine or an MBBS person who knows what PCOS or PCOD is. I think self-diagnosis nowadays is becoming a lot. If they have irregular periods, the first thing they think is, I have PCOD. I said, no, wait, let me scan and tell you whether it is a PCOD or PCOS. And based on that, we'll start treating.
From a patient standpoint, let's say I have an 18-year-old daughter who's having irregular periods. Okay. This really happened, actually. Mm. My family member, they took her to the doctor. The doctor said, you have PCOS. Mm. Okay. They really got so stressed. So they called me in the middle of the night that, okay, my daughter's not going to get married. I mean, it's going to have difficulties in marriage. They will not be able to conceive. What will I do and everything? So I said, you know, first let's analyze what's happening. So what are all the other reasons that could be for irregular periods?
So basically what's happening is PCOS or PCOD, whatever, they consider as one of the most commonest reason for irregular periods. Uh-huh. That's well known nowadays because there's a lot of information available on social media. So what do patients think is, they think that that's the only reason. Mm. That's the first thing. Mm. Second, they don't even evaluate thyroid most of the time. So hypothyroid is also one of the most common reasons why your periods get irregular. Mm. And third, overweight or even obesity. And particularly when you say 18-year-old, I can understand the stress she's going through. Mm. She would have just finished her 10th or 11th. Correct. Or she must be giving her board exams.
Correct.
The stress, sleeplessness, undue amount of no physical activity. The minute the kid goes into 9th or 10th grade, they're pushed into only studies. All those years, they'd be doing some amount of physical activity. They would be in sport or they would be dancing. That's all completely shut by the time they come off to their board exams. So it becomes extremely difficult for parents to accept that. And the minute they say PCOS, I should even also say the scan people. So even when they scan, it's very important that we give a diagnosis of PCOS only when all the symptoms are met in the category. But the criteria has to be met before you even comment or utter the word as polycystic. The first thing they think is, I have too many cysts in my ovary. That's not how it is. It's just the pattern of the ovary. Mm. And the pattern of the ovary is, it's actually a misnomer.
Mm.
Polycystic ovarian syndrome or a disease is a misnomer. That doesn't mean that you have too many cysts in your ovary. They are follicles. I easily explain to one of the patients, whenever patients come to me for irregular periods, I said, why doctor? Why am I not getting regular periods? So the easiest way I could probably put it across to patients is that when you probably say you have 40 students in a class, and in a month, there should be only one student who can become the leader of the class. There's no one student. Everyone wants to become the leader. So the leader is not elected by the end. So the 1 month just passed by without any leader. So that's very simple, very typical of a polycystic ovary. One of your egg doesn't get mature in that month. By 15th day, that egg should be matured. Until 30 days, 40 days, 50 days, they are still electing the leader. That means one of the egg is not selected at all. Uh-huh. So that's why only when you have the egg selected and it becomes mature, it becomes a leader, when it does not fuse with the sperm, you're not going to have pregnancy, you're going to have periods.
Mm.
So this way the patients understand a lot better. I tell them, so what do you need to do for you to ovulate regularly? So the minute you ovulate, the egg releases, you're going to get periods within 2 weeks. Mm. The first thing I always believe is lifestyle. Mm. Lifestyle change. Let it be 11th grade or 12th grade. Even we did our 10th and 11th. Even we were also studying. It's not that we didn't study. But I feel nowadays the kids are already pushed. They're starting, need coaching from 8th grade itself. I see few kids starting from 7th and 8th. Mm. So it's become a lot. The thing is that they have to study. So there's no physical activity at all. I tell parents, let them study, but the topic which they're going to study for 3 hours, if you allow them to send for some physical activity, they'll finish off in 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Ask them to play for half an hour or 1 hour. They can play badminton, they can play racket sports, swimming, anything. Study the same topic and they'll finish off in 1 hour, which they're supposed to do in 3 hours. And it actually clicks. Swimming helps a lot. The only thing is any physical activity is fine, but a kid needs physical activity. That's first. Genetics, of course, we can't go in and change their genetics. But I feel a lot to do with stress, sleeplessness, junk, lifestyle changes are the pointers, apart from thyroid. Thyroid, PCOS, and apart from all these insulin resistant things, these are the common reasons why you could have irregular periods.
In your practice, you keep mentioning stress repeatedly. Yeah. Okay. Is that a reason that you're mentioning it because it's getting very common, or is that one of the most important factors that will
come? No, it does. It actually makes a difference because your hormones get affected when you're stressed, when you don't sleep properly, when you're not having your food properly. For example, when you even overeat or undereat, both actually has an impact on your adipose cells. And that also has a direct impact on your estrogens. And that irregular makes your cycles irregular. It's extremely common. So stress does play a major role in your period cycle. I feel when you ask them, probably when they shift their houses or they have not slept for long or they had their exams going on, those periods get delayed. And once the kids' exams are over or anything, and then just gets regularized just like that without even medications. Stress does play a huge role in cycle regularity.
So getting a period delayed for a month, is it abnormal?
Actually not. Actually, let them not stress about it. I always tell them, if your cycles are regular, that's good. So regular cycles means every monthly one. So monthly once is probably 30 days. So have plus or minus 5 days. From 25 days to 35 days, it's considered regular. So when your periods, probably you're not getting your periods beyond 35, say for example, a week or 10 days or probably 45 days or 50 days, then you go meet a doctor. But that doesn't mean it's really abnormal. The first thing you need to check is what happened over the past 1 month or 2 months. If you feel that you have not been doing what you routinely do, or if you feel that this is not a routine thing, don't jump in and think that there's something abnormal. Don't get scared. If this is a pattern you're seeing over a period of 3 months or 4 months, then it's very important that you evaluate your hormones, then you do your scan, ultrasound, pelvic scan, to check if there's any cyst or anything to do with your hormones like thyroid or even anemia. For that matter, many patients, I've seen patients with 6 grams, 7 grams hemoglobin. The minute you correct their anemia, the periods get regular. Wow. So it's extremely common. The most easily treatable causes we miss. And that's very, very important for us to know that all irregular periods, you don't have to worry. And if it's a pattern over a period of 3 to 6 months, and I tell my patients to maintain a diary. It's called menstrual diary. So I tell them, I mean, nowadays no one is writing a diary, their chart, because that actually tells you, you might not even remember when you got your last period, but then making a note of it for 3 months to 6 months actually helps the doctor in analyzing your and the period cycle. So I think just 1 month irregular period or just delayed periods, I think you should not worry much. Over a period of time, if it is, yes, definitely you need to evaluate.
In your practice, when you think stress is the reason for this delayed periods or maybe a combination of a PCOS, PCOD, what is the first thing that you do?
I just tell them to stop their gadget usage. That's the first thing. Most of the kids these days, the teens and even the mothers or young mothers, as much as they tell their kids not to use gadget, I said, just first start practicing yourself. Even if it's going to be my video or even Dr. Paul's video, you watch it before 7 o'clock. You stop using phones after 8, because that definitely hampers the entire lifestyle, not just the mother, the entire family, because the kids are going to have their dinner late, they're going to sleep late, the next day is going to get messed up. So I feel the first thing for stress is their, and also on the contrary, if you see the secondary effect of it, you sit down and watch a video. You don't keep doing cycling or you don't keep jogging and watch a video, right? So of course your sedentary lifestyle also is an add-on the minute you start your phones. I feel that's the first thing. And check on your sleep. The minute you stop the gadget, it's all like a circle. Your sleep gets better. Read a book. If you don't feel sleepy, probably go for a walk. Have a light dinner. Go for a walk. Read a book. And you will automatically feel sleepy. You open a book, you will definitely feel sleepy, no matter what book it is. I think gadget usage nowadays, specifically for breastfeeding mothers, would you even believe when I say that they watch phones while they're feeding their babies? I said, stop doing that. doctor, what do? Every 2 hours, every 3 hours, I'm feeding and I'm just bored. What do? I'm sitting in the room. No one is there to talk to me. I just have my phones. I said, that's the time that you need to be with the baby. How many months are you going to breastfeed? How many years are you going to breastfeed? Make sure that you have a skin-to-skin contact. Talk to the baby. Be with the baby. You can play soft music in the room. Mm. Make the room calm and dim-lit so that it's easy for the baby to come and have a good meal that time. And I think you should avoid phones during feeding and also maximum during pregnancy, because I think there's a lot of information available on the social media, and I think patients should know whom they are getting that information from. I think that needs to be conveyed to the patient, because randomly they get a lot of information, they don't know how to process that information. That's adding stress, and ultimately they are going in to find the answer in the next videos, and of course that's an ever-ending vicious cycle. Yeah.
So what should a breastfeeding mother do while she is feeding the baby?
Well, that's a wonderful question, because breastfeeding mothers generally, when they feed, we still in India, we don't there are a couple of places where we can cover ourselves and feed, or we do have public places where they have separately given for feeding, but still breastfeeding mother wants to be alone, isn't it? And at that time of breastfeeding, no one enters the room. Most of the time, there's not many people who enter the room. They are inside a closed space. And that's the phase that they actually go through soon after delivery. It can be a first-time mother. It can be a second-time mother. Doesn't matter. But then that's the phase where her hormones are like going up and down. And she's most of the time alone. If not for her family, of course. And imagine in a room, in an Indian scenario, when the mother is going to feed, the baby is crying. Of course, everyone will shut the door and go out. Okay, you feed. I'll wait outside. So that's exactly what any grandmother or any grandparent would do. So when that happens, what happens is that mother does not have anyone to talk to there. We don't want anyone to talk to, but you have a little one there. So I always tell them, whenever they come to me post-delivery to check if everything is fine, I tell them, talk to the baby. That skin-to-skin contact is extremely important. I think the room...
Skin to skin is the baby's...
Baby to the mother's skin. That's extremely crucial, because that actually calms the baby down. A crying baby, even if you don't feed, you actually promote skin to skin contact. The baby settles down very soon. Even if you wrap, or if you can remove the wrap and put the baby onto your skin, even if the father who's going to do that, it actually settles down the baby, a crying baby. And a mother who's going to have skin-to-skin contact, and see, for example, just imagine for an example, she's going to have a baby feeding on one side, she's going to watch phone. I mean, that's not what you want to do. As much as it's so easily available, you don't want to switch on a TV, or you don't want to watch iPad when the time you're feeding, because the baby is there right next to you. You can cuddle the baby, you can pat the baby, you can actually make sure that the baby is comfortable. You can position yourself so that you don't have back pain or you don't have any issues with your abdominal pain. So you can do many things when you're feeding a baby. Just think about the baby. You can sing songs. You can have a mild music which is running in your room. You can calm your room down so that the baby is also settled down. So I think that's very important.
It increases the bonding.
It definitely increases the bonding, because the bonding which the mother and baby gets during the feeding time, you will not get it anytime. That's very, very important.
For your patients, how long do you recommend breastfeeding?
Basically, exclusive breastfeeding is up till 6 months.
6 months.
So until you start solids by 6 or 7 months. But then you can go up till 1 year or 2 years also. You can go up till 2 years. Plenty of studies who say that, which says that up till 2 years has excellent immunity for the newborn as well. So we do not stop them. Even if the mother gets pregnant, say the baby is 1 year old, she's feeding and she's pregnant the second time, we encourage the mother to feed the child. Even if you are pregnant now, it's okay, because patients have a lot of opinions on that. How can I feed my first kid, doctor, because I'm pregnant now? This kid needs milk. I said, milk, you will get milk, so don't worry. Just supplement yourself with good amount of calcium in your diet and the supplements which we give. You can definitely feed your child.
A common thing that I get is, okay, if I get diagnosis PCOS, I'm not going to get pregnant. Your experience on that, in terms of what is the prognosis of the disease, whether it's PCOS is better, PCOD is better.
Okay, so basically the first thing they need to understand is not that they're not going to get pregnant at all. Definitely that's completely a myth. You just have to make, there's so many follicles, like how I told the story, you just have to make sure that one egg is released. And one egg and one sperm is enough to make a baby. The problem they get scared is that when they don't ovulate, that is when the egg is not getting mature. That's the issue. And PCOD, As long as your lifestyle changes are corrected, the patients do very well. Your PCOS, that means you're already into the metabolic syndrome and endocrine issues, right? So the thing is, apart from lifestyle changes, they need treatment. Either we have to give them hormone supplements, or we need to induce, we need to give a little bit more push through our hormones and injections or tablets to make the egg become more mature. That's what we need to do. But there's absolutely nothing that they cannot conceive. They can definitely conceive. But if for our medicines to work, their lifestyle changes has to cooperate. Because that has to happen. We can't just keep doing our medicines. How many doses of medicines can I give?
Correct.
How many doses of gonadotropins or any other hormone injections can I give?
Correct.
As long as they are going to work on their lifestyle, even 5 to 7% reduction in their body weight can make them ovulate. More than 75 to 80% of them ovulate just by reducing 7% of their body weight. If I tell them this, they're actually ready to do it. I've seen so many patients. I actually tell them this is a deal. I'll see you in 3 months. It's a deal. I'm not going to give you any medicines. But if you can, if they're around 27, 28, we generally don't start treatment for infertility immediately once they get married. At least we allow them for 1 year or 2 years also if they are only 25, 26. By the time most of them conceive naturally and come. Now we've started playing a game. Okay, now let's say I'll also do workout every day, you also do workout every day, and then let's see how it is at the end of 3 months. So I've started doing like that, and that actually motivates them a lot. There's a community where there are a couple of patients who are ready to be in a community, like a WhatsApp group or something. We are a part of that group where they motivate each other. That's a wonderful thing. And they motivate each other in step count, or I did the workout and that's what I had for lunch. I think group workout, at least doing it for their better.
Correct.
I think PCOS should not be considered as a place where they have to go only for treatment or IVF. They can do it. For our treatment to work, even with normal hormone medicines, I think their lifestyle changes will help a lot.
You talked about the ages, like 25, 26. Yeah. In your experience, what is the best time to get pregnant?
If I say no, this, then everyone are going to get really angry. That was a working mother. The ideal age, let me tell you, as a fetal medicine consultant also, because I see a lot of fetuses in scan, pregnancy scans. When the mother is around 24, early 20s, not very early, like 19, 20, I'm not saying that. After 22, 23, like 24, 25-ish, that's the best time. And earlier they used to get married when they were 21, 22, and they had their first kid by 25, and before 27, 20, they're done with their family. On the contrary, now, for the good, for the better, definitely, women are into their career and they want to do well. But at the same time, I would tell them that career is going to go. It's not going to go anywhere. You will get to go where you are, but if you're motivated to do that, you will be there. But at the same time, don't leave this. I generally tell them, if you're getting married by around 24, 25 years, plan your pregnancy, 1 or 2 years. And at the same time, you'll have energy to take care of your baby. And if you're motivated enough, you will reach the goal in your career, in your professional life as well. Because as a professional woman who works, who has a preteen daughter and doing my work, it's extremely difficult.
It's not easy.
It is difficult. I agree. But then there's nothing that you can't do. If you have a mind, heart and soul to it, you can definitely achieve it. And do not delay your pregnancy for this. Because I have seen chromosome problems. That's like abnormalities where genetic issues or chromosome problems for very young girls. Like when they get married by 18, 19, very early pregnancies. And later pregnancies.
More than 35,
37. So everyone thinks that, let them get married at 18. They'll have their first kid. No. We've had more number of chromosomal abnormalities before 20, before 19, 18 and all. And after 35, 36, 37. Nowadays, we considered advanced maternal age only after 37. Earlier, we used to take it as 35. Now, we've all shifted. But generally, we have enough data and we have many things to identify if there could be a chromosomal abnormality. But if you have an option to have a pregnancy, have it before 30.
Before 30.
Yeah. If you get married by 24, 25, complete your family.
I'm going to stir this controversy even more. Where, you know, people are not finding the right person. Okay. So, you know, arranged marriages, love marriage, doesn't matter. But you're not finding the right person. So they're delaying the marriage. So the argument is that, okay, why should I get into a marriage to get pregnant if when I'm not sure whether it's the right marriage or not? In that case scenario, let's say that's what I think, is the preservation of their ovum and everything, do you recommend?
Of course, yes, because that's one of the new things which has come up. We've been doing it for quite some time actually, but suddenly it's cropped up now. But in the sense, it's good in a way because they don't know that they can actually do it. Earlier and all, we used to do it for IVF pregnancies and ARTs. We used to freeze our eggs, even sperms as well, because there are husbands who work in Navy, who are sailors, who go to the ship. They are available only for 3 months in a year. They're available only for 4 months in a year. And poor women, when they come for 2-3 months, they don't even enjoy their marriage life. All what they have to do is get pregnant because properly. There's a society pressure. And I feel really sad for them. I said, don't worry. First, have good time. Spend time with each other for one month or 2 months. And even if you can't conceive naturally, it's okay. Tell them, probably you can freeze their sperms. And if that's the issue with the husband not staying with the woman, or for a woman who really wants to plan her career ahead and who have not decided when to get married, as you said, that you're not seeing the right person, you can definitely freeze your eggs. Freeze your eggs anytime.
Because it's not complicated.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. And the eggs, it's so safe because that's, even if you're going to be 34, 35 or even 37, your eggs are going to be 25. And you can actually bear a healthy kid.
But thawing it and then...
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The age is still the age. Ah. The egg's age is still the age when you actually preserved it. Your age can be 35, 36, but the age when you preserve the egg is 25. Your egg age is still the same. It has to be stored in a place and that can be reused anytime. So it's very important that patients know if they are going to plan pregnancy later and when they know that they're going to get married later. We've had plenty of patients who come in, even unmarried, not just celebrities. We've had regular patients. Common people coming in and asking us. I feel that's for good.
Nice.
I feel that's for good. They don't have to compromise on their career just because that they have to get married. No, okay, I have to have a baby before 30. So I have to get married at 24. No, nothing like that. If you, in a scenario where you get married early, try to have pregnancy or babies earlier. But if in case that you can't get married for whatever reason it is, then you can easily preserve your...
So you're telling me it's a safe procedure.
It is, absolutely.
And the outcome
safe.
Is better.
Yes.
And even if we take, is there a age limit like 36, 37? Doesn't matter. How long does it last?
Generally before 35. Because 35. After 35, there's a sharp decline in the egg quality, which we don't want. So preserving an egg after 35, 36, 37, we generally don't preserve all the eggs. We retrieve the eggs. We see the quality of eggs. So there's grading of eggs, like how we grade embryos once it's made. We have grading of eggs also. So we take good quality eggs and preserve it. So generally, preferably to preserve if you're thinking before 30. About 35, 36, the egg quality does decline.
How about preserving at 25? And how long can we use that egg? Like 37, 30? Doesn't matter.
Anytime. You can preserve it even for lifelong. So it's anytime. You can use it 10 years later, 15 years later, anytime. Doesn't matter.
So that's actually,
because all this started only when IVF started. And we did preserve oocytes because if first cycle IVF failed, we don't have to again give hormones for the mother or the patient and again retrieve the egg. Again, she has to go through a procedure for anesthesia. So what we do, we retrieve eggs, store it, freeze it, so that the IVF cycles can have only embryo transfer, just the baby getting transferred. She doesn't have to go through the process of hormone injections every time.
Wow.
That's very difficult for a mother to go through plenty of injections. And it's emotionally also very traumatizing. It's not that easy. We can give injections and see, but it's not that easy.
When a patient comes to you and then says that, hey, you know, I want my egg to be frozen now, what is the societal pressure that the patient is undergoing?
Actually, the patients do come alone. They don't come with family. More than 90% of them, they actually come alone. Either they come with their partner or a fiancé or whoever, or whether they're planning to get married, or they don't come with their parents yet. I think now we've still not opened up to that forum because I think parents, of course, their parents are going to be 1960s or 1970s. They've still not opened up to that level, but then patients, young girls do come. I'm still not with the parents.
I'm not sure
if the parents are aware of it.
Right.
But young girls do come without the parents though.
I'm just talking to talk about men now.
I think that's also important.
Is this applied to men? I mean, for freezing the sperm?
Yes, it does. We recently had a celebrity also. I think they preserved a singer. I don't remember his name. But then they preserved his sperm and they have a kid from him now, the parents. The singer somehow, I think, unfortunately, succumbed. I couldn't make it. Either. And then they have the kid by using his sperm. So anything is possible.
Age limit for men where the risk of chromosome?
Generally, no.
No, right? For men, it's no.
Around 45, 50, because the spermatogenesis does every 72 days once. Uh-huh. So, new fresh quality of sperm. Generally, around until 45, it should be good. Because, and also, it's not only about the age. It's about the other habits like BMI,
smoking,
your alcohol, and everything plays a role. So what happens is that as you age, your metabolic disorders also increases.
Diabetes.
So that also has an effect on your egg and sperm quality.
Mm.
So the earlier, the better.
Really the better.
Mm. Even for men. Even for men. Not just sperms. As I said, not only eggs. Even for sperms, earlier the better.
So I don't practice in India, but when I was medical school and I was doing medicine over here, I see a couple coming into the OBGYN clinic. They would try 1 year of natural conception, didn't happen. They're coming, and invariably, infertility discussion was only discussed with the women. Is this the same case now, or has it improved?
No, definitely it's improved.
Improved.
Definitely. Mm. Because the time when we were and even I was studying, I think almost the same time, it will be only the mother,
correct,
the woman, and her mother, or the mother-in-law.
Mm.
The husband won't even be in the scene. But nowadays, it's completely different.
Uh-huh.
And I do see a lot of husbands being involved in women's health.
Nice.
The first question they ask me is she okay, doctor? Is she okay? If she is fine, if everything is fine, then we are okay to do. I see a huge difference over a decade now.
Nice.
Within 10 to 15 years, it's a lot. But still, we do have patients where the husband doesn't come.
Mm.
He feels that he is not responsible
involved
for anything.
Mm.
There are. But there's a huge drastic change from what we saw earlier,
correct,
in our PG days and,
correct,
postgraduates.
Mm.
And from now, I think the husbands are definitely involved.
Nice.
I should give it to them. They're
nice.
Definitely involved.
Thank you.
I should say that. That's the truth.
The other angle to this is translating that. Okay, so you have a IVF, infertility, difficulty in conception. The other angle to this is you are naturally conceived. You have two little kids. And now you're planning for birth control.
Mm.
Again, the same question, where traditionally tubal ligation, where you tie the tubes of coming from the ovary in the women, has been one of the birth control method, or oral contraceptive pills where we give to the women.
True.
How about vasectomy in men? Why is that a big thing in the US and not in India?
I don't think it's still much.
It's not catching
India.
Up.
I have to go against the men, I think. I think for once, because no, I think that's still not come up.
What do you think so?
I feel the awareness is not there.
Not there.
Yeah.
Huh.
I feel the awareness is not there. The easy thing for them to say, you finished family.
Mm.
And earlier and all, we used to do cesarean section. Along with that, we used to do,
correct,
family planning
tubal
also.
Ah.
We would just ask them tubal ligation. They said, they'll give a consent form. They'll be very happy.
Happy.
No matter what. But nowadays, we're actually postponing it.
Huh.
We're not doing it with the elective cesarean. Even if it's a second pregnancy, what we tell the mothers is wait. Wait for the kid to develop. 2 years, 3 years. Let the kid become 2 years. Let the child start talking. Let the brain development be okay.
Mm.
Let the baby have a normal development. And then you come for laparoscopic sterilization, because that's a daycare procedure. And your tubal ligation, earlier we used to do a mini laparotomy, open and do. Along, if it's not a cesarean, if it's a vaginal delivery, we'll open and do. Nowadays, we tell them you can do laparoscopy, but allow the baby to grow for 2 years. Only after 2 years, we accept them for a laparoscopic sterilization. Unfortunately, I feel still vasectomy is not picked up.
Mm. Tell to our audience, what is vasectomy?
Vasectomy is just like as much as ligating the tube for the woman. It's like ligating the vas deferens. So obviously, the tube which connects, where it makes sure that the sperm gets ejaculated outside, that tube.
Mm.
So that your sperm production, quantity, everything will be normal.
Mm.
Like how the woman is going to have her periods regularly. Similarly, the men is also going to have the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just that the tubes will be ligated, because in your ejaculated, the sperms will not come, so that the woman will not get pregnant.
Pregnant, correct. Mm.
That's the only thing. But I feel I think we'll only have to create awareness about vasectomy, I think. That's actually, it's also a very simple procedure.
Simple procedure.
It's much simpler than a tubal ligation.
Mm. And also the birth control pills.
No, actually, we can't give birth control pills for too long.
Ah.
That's the problem.
Ah.
Because not more than 3 to 6 months. Because even the birth control pills have their own disadvantages, right? There's a very rare complication of a thromboembolism.
A blood clot.
Blood clot. Mm. A blood clot, it can lead to a stroke. You can even have ovarian or breast cancers also with excessive use of oral pills. Be very careful with the type of pills we're using. Not more than 3 to 6 months. So that's not a long-term method.
I see.
We can't use that a long-term method. The other one is a copper T. That is just like a copper T
device
inside for at least for 5 years. But then if you want a permanent method, it's either a tubal ligation for the woman or a vasectomy for a tube ligation for the partner. I think the awareness is that the men think that they will lose their masculinity or I think that's one of the reasons why they've still not come up for that. They have caught up with that. And it has to be done by a surgeon. And that also, the thing is, they can't wear comfortable clothes after that. At least for the first few weeks, they can't wear pants. And I think a working...
That's the slightest inconvenience.
That's true, actually.
Compared to the multiple inconveniences the woman is going through.
True, seriously.
I am a very strong proponent of vasectomy because I see that is very commonly happening in the US. Yeah. To a point that the women... I mean, this is I see it in my patients. They sometimes force the man to.
Actually, I think that's what we need to do from now on, because for the woman to get admitted and then go back, return to her routine life and take care of the children, it's easy for the man to go.
Easy for the man. It's painless, literally painless.
Seriously, so actually done to local kuda sometimes.
Local anesthesia.
Sometimes you can. I mean, I'm not saying you should do it, but then that's it can be done. It's not a very difficult procedure.
I think once they know that your masculinity will not go down.
Yeah.
And just the angle that, you know, this is a very simple procedure compared to the side effects that the women can go through.
Yeah.
I'm a very big proponent of it. That's why the government is also giving some incentives over here.
I'm sure, I think after this video, many women
will force
the men to get the vasectomy done.
Already many men are actually hating me to the core.
You're going to get a lot more than...
So, you know, the reason we talk about this is that the PCOS, infertility and all these birth control pills, everything comes under a bigger lifestyle umbrella.
True.
How is diet playing a role in your treatment of PCOS?
I think diet is one of the major things. Mm-hmm. Apart from medicines, whenever I give medicines for like hormones or anything, I tell them, as long as you're not going to fix your diet, I'm not going to give you medicines. Mm. Because my medicine will work. Anything, for that matter, I'm going to give medicine for your insulin resistance or anything whenever I give. It will work only when you are going to be on a diet. And the thing, when I say diet, they think that they should not eat. I think that to break that myth takes a lot of time. Mm. To have them come to the picture and say that diet is not eating. Diet is eating in the right quantity at the right time. Mm. So that makes a huge difference. Mm. Because nowadays when you tell them, doctor, we come back only by 9:30, 10, both of us are working, I feel so tired to cook and eat or have a dinner much earlier, I tell them, finish your dinner before 7. No, doctor, that's not possible. We come back and we see in Annanagar, we see food court, we stand there, we have biryani and come and what time do you have? 10, 10:30. Well, that's not going to work when you're planning a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. As much as you want it to be a healthy pregnancy, you need to prepare your body as well as people think that it's only women. I definitely, again, for the men aspect, they have to prepare themselves also. Because
the quality of the sperm.
It makes a huge difference. Mm. In miscarriages, how many of them think that miscarriage is only a woman thing? How many of them know that it's because it could also depend on the sperm? It could also depend on the quality of the sperm that a miscarriage can happen. Never always the woman's fault. I think it's extremely important that your diet, not just smoking and alcohol, your timing of food, the quantity, and what you eat.
Mm.
I tell them, don't make it simple. Just make sure that every meal you have one fruit, one vegetable.
Mm.
Just start with that. Mm. That's your first week goal.
Mm.
I give them 12 weeks goal. Literally, I tell them weekly once you incorporate one idea, then every idea you should add on to the next week. First week is incorporate one fruit and one vegetable. Second week, make sure that you have at least 2 to 3 liters of water.
Mm.
Include that fruit and water. Third week, you check. Because if I bombard them with too much information on the first time, they won't come back to me next time.
Mm.
They'll be like, doctor said I have to lose weight, I have to diet, I'll not eat anything. And finally, they'll lose 2 kgs. That'll be only water loss. Then they'll come back gaining 3 more kgs than what they have lost earlier. So I'll tell them, start with small steps, tiny steps. As much as possible, incorporate those steps so that it becomes a lifestyle. So including a fruit and a vegetable specifically in your every meal makes a huge difference, because that increases their fiber intake. Second, you increase their hydration. They increase their water intake. Third, fix their sleep. Fourth week, then gadget. So small things you tweak a little bit, actually they feel a lot better. Yeah, definitely.
What is the most common dietary mistake that your PCOS patient would do?
most common, right? You know, generally when they feel a lot moody or when they feel very, when they don't get periods, what happens is the progesterone completely, there's hardly not a good amount of progesterone in their body to let go of periods, but then they do have a lot of bloating and heaviness, mood swings and all. And the minute they have all that, they'll have to have something sweet.
Sweet.
Something.
Sugar cream.
No, doctor. I have to eat something sweet. How can I sleep without having sweet? I'm having so much of mood swings. I'm shouting. I need to have something sweet. So either they junk eat. Easy thing is to order. We have everything available nowadays. And they just order food. It's either an ice cream or a donut or a pastry. I feel that's where they get into a cycle that, okay, it's okay. It's only today, right? It's only today, right? So they don't even understand, even when they have menstrual cramps, the worst part is having junk. Actually, menstrual cramps gets easily alleviated when you avoid junks. Avoid caffeine, avoid junk. Your cramps actually reduce.
It's better.
You increase seeds in your diet. You can actually even work out if you feel good. And yoga, just a walk or a brisk walk, or even there are menstrual cups now. With cups, you can even swim. You can wear a menstrual cup and even swim. If you are a good swimmer or you like swimming, actually that relieves your cramps a lot better.
I
tell them, stop junk eating. I think most of the things they do is to eat junk. I think, and processed food. And they feel that it's only today. It's just one day. And that actually continues the entire day until that they don't get their periods. Again, it's bloated. And again, they feel dull. And then they have to come to us for a medicine to withdraw and then get their periods. I think most common mistake is they have a lot of sugary, processed food.
Nice. Wonderful. Wonderful discussion, as usual. Thank you. Thank you so much for such a wonderful insight.
Thank you so much.
And keep doing good work.
Thank you.
Keep spreading the word. Okay.
And my wishes to you also.
Thank you. Thank
Trying very different things, and I hope, I'm sure patients are really, really happy. And the population deserves a lot of information like this.
Yeah.
Because gut health became popular only after you started talking about it. I think that's very important.
I'm similar to how you do. People, when they come and they say, you know, I lost some weight because of you, I feel happy, and that keeps me going. And I think every doctor should be on social media promoting their expertise. And thank you so much for your hard work, commitment, and wonderful talking.
Thank you so much. Convey my regards to Priya also.
Of course.
It's been so long since I met her. It's been a year, close to a year. Convey my regards to her.
Of course.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you, Deepthi.
We'll meet up soon. Thank you.
Hello guys, that was a wonderful podcast session. I absolutely enjoyed it. I'm sure that you would have enjoyed it as well. Lots of take-home points. I really want you to observe the discussion and see how you can practically implement that into your lifestyle. So I'm sure that this will definitely help you in smaller steps to reach your long-term outcome. So the other important announcement I want to give you is we do have a holistic gut health program called New Me. This is not only helpful for weight loss, all PCOS patients, hypothyroidism, or any kind of insulin resistance related problems, we would be happy to help you out. This is a program that I am very passionate about. I put this together in terms of what I will expect if I am a patient. Check that link in the pinned comment and explore it more. As usual, it is one belly at a time. It is absolutely important. Stay happy, stay gutsy. May God bless you.